Hello, listeners. Before we get started with today's show, I wanted to give y'all a little PSA, a little something, something. As many of you know, Paper Towns, the novel written by John Green, was recently adapted to a movie and released last week, a couple of weeks ago. I don't know. It depends on when you're listening to this. So, at the end of August, we want to host a Paper Towns book/movie review episode. But that's not the best part. For the first time ever, we would like to invite you listeners onto the show and join us in our Paper Towns discussion. I just said that. There's no turning back now. This is something brand new we've never done before. So if you have Paper Towns thoughts and feels and just want to share that with the world, then write into us at factionfandompodcast@gmail.com in order to be a guest host. Tell us your name, your Gmail address, and your time zone. It does not have to be your full name, but you must have a Gmail account for this to work. We don't know how many guest hosts we want, but the sooner you write in, the better your chances will be. Thank you for your time, and on to the show. If you're freaking out about the new Mockingjay trailer, then stay tuned because this is Faction Fandom.
Oh, so freaking out about Mockingjay.
We're definitely freaking out about Mockingjay.
I'm completely freaking out about Mockingjay.
Oh, it's funny as I was just thinking the other day, like 2 or 3 days ago, wondering when it's going to come out because it's like 4 months, 5 months, and we still haven't gotten anything. So,
but anyway, get that teaser poster.
That was intense. But welcome, listeners, to episode 24. We are going to be talking about a lot of great news, a lot of chapters today, and we're going to do it all under 2 hours, Alyssa.
Are we?
We are. We're going to do our best to keep it in check, but we are going to start out with some books. What are you currently reading, Alyssa?
What am I not currently reading? I am reading a book called From a Distant Star, which I'm really enjoying. I am reading a book called Uprooted, which I'm also really enjoying. And I am reading a book that I got from the very first Muse monthly subscription box called Our Endless Numbered Days, which is kind of blowing my mind a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, I did my thing and I read the end of it because I got into it and was like, I need to know what happens. And I kind of hate myself at the moment. Everything about the end makes me just want to go, I need to know what happens. It's terrifying.
I bet. I have no sympathy for you.
That nor should you, although I did just do that to a TV show today that I did not want to do. I don't typically spoil myself for TV shows, I did it by accident today.
What TV show was it?
Criminal Minds.
Oh, Alyssa and her Criminal Minds.
I'm rewatching it because I can, and season 10 should be coming out on Netflix soon, and I'm just kind of like working my way back through it, and I went to find something in the timeline and found something out that I really didn't want to find out, and I'm not happy about it.
I guess you'll just have to catch yourself up.
Alternatively, simply stop because I don't want it to happen. I don't want it to happen. The thing that I found out. I don't want to watch it happen. I don't want to know that it happens, and I don't want it to happen.
Well, I wish the best of luck to you.
I am in full denial mode. What are you reading, Stephanie?
I'm reading a couple things. I kind of stopped reading some things too, which is bad. I have a problem. I have an issue. I need to fix it. But right now I'm currently reading Heartless.
Okay.
It's the fourth book.
Yep.
In the Parasol Protectorate. I've said this before, but I'm really getting into it now. I was reading The Iron Knight. I reread all of those books in order to get to this one
And now I don't even want to read The Iron Knight. I feel like I've burnt myself out on this world and this story. And I'm like, I don't want that. I don't want that. So I moved on to something more fun. So I'm reading Heartless, and I'm reading Forever, and I'm re-listening to the Finishing School series because I'm in a Gail Carriger mood, I guess.
Who's not in a Gail Carriger mood?
I don't know. In the spirit of summer, though, do you have any specific place that you like to read now that the sun's out, the rain and the cold have kind of gone away for this world that we live in?
There are a lot of places I enjoy reading, and most of them involve my bed. But I do really enjoy, when I can, I really enjoy reading on the beach. And I really enjoy, reading on my dad's boat when I've taken all of my medication.
Oh, do you get seasick?
I get seasick.
Aw.
I get air sick. I get car sick. I get motion
all
sick,
the time.
And yet I get sick.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
It's the worst. It's a painful process, and I just suck it up, and I eat all the ginger, and I just
get through it.
Power through.
I bet it's fun reading on a boat.
When there's like air hitting you and you're just kind of floating along, it's really lovely, especially when, I'm not expected to do anything with the sails.
You're like, I can just sit back with a beer and chill.
When I can just sit back with a beer, exactly, and my book, and I can just, not do anything. I can just, sit there.
Your feet's propped up. Everyone else is doing all the work, and you're just like...
Everyone else, my dad. It is everyone else.
I'm thinking in the mindset that it takes more than one person to sail a boat or to run a boat or something.
It does.
I never got the chance to read at the beach, but I do like to go outside in the back with my dogs, who are now famous.
Yes.
Anyway, so they get to run around in the sun and chill. I lay out a blanket. I bring some water, hang out with them. It's nice. I like to read indoors in the summer, though.
I like to read everywhere.
It's hot where I am, so I like to be in the cool, sweet air conditioning.
True story.
Anyway, let's go ahead and move on to some news.
Okay.
We talked about this last time.
We did.
Technical problems didn't make the cut. So we're just going to recap a little bit about Theo James starring in Underworld 5. Why are they making more Underworlds? I don't understand.
I really wish they wouldn't.
I don't get it. I mean,
the first one was fine. The second one got wonky.
Yeah.
And then after that, they just got stupid. I didn't watch it after the second. I didn't even watch the second one. The first one was so good. They had such a good storyline. What the fuck did they have to go and ruin it for?
They had to make more. A lot of times,
no, they didn't.
More isn't the best option.
They did not have to make more.
But according to this, Theo James starred in Underworld 4, but not a very big part. But he's supposed to, quote unquote, star a little bit more of a better role in Underworld 5, which comes out
stupid.
Sometime. I don't know. We don't really check because we're not going to go watch it. But good luck to him.
Not that I am not unhappy for Theo James that he is getting movie roles and that he is doing things. But so many things could be done that are better than the continuation of the Underworld series.
Mm-hmm. So many things.
And you know what I attribute this to?
What do you attribute it to?
Boys being stupid.
Boys being stupid. I attribute it to writers not having anything original to write. So they
Fair point.
Have to make sequels and prequels and spinoffs and movie adaptations. But good luck to him.
Good luck to him.
And whatever he wants to do. More news for us. The Insurgent DVD is going to come out August 4th. This isn't really news, but I thought I'd throw that out there in case people are thinking, hey, when's that going to come out? It's going to come out in a couple of months. And then a week or so after that day, The Teen Choice Awards will air on Fox. Whether or not you'll watch them is up to you. But
I probably won't.
For the Divergent fandom, it's good for the publicity, I guess, for that. Let's see. Insurgent is nominated for the action movie. Theo and Ansel are both nominated for the choice action movie actor. And then Shailene Woodley is nominated for the action movie actress. So basically, when the MTV Movie Awards came out, they managed to squeeze Divergent in there. And now we're getting the award for all the Insurgent stuff.
Yes! Because, you know.
That's essentially it.
That movie was such a great adaptation.
No comment. Okay.
We had this whole conversation already. We don't need to go back.
We had this whole conversation. Reference to the movie commentary. Go back a couple episodes and check it out.
Yeah. Go find that one out.
If you liked the Insurgent movie, probably don't listen to it because.
Yes, don't listen to it if you liked the Insurgent movie adaptation.
Sorry.
Because we were cruel.
We are not happy. On another note, we are happy about the Lunar Chronicles short story book that's going to come out.
I am sad about one thing regarding that book.
Okay, what are you sad about?
It is pushing Heartless back until November.
Okay, yes. Very true. But, one, Heartless is, like, done. So that's nice. And we are getting Winter in November. So think of it like last year. You know, you're gonna get something in February and November. Fun things.
Yeah, well the February book kind of like Livana.
What this book is though, is a collection of short stories. Marissa Meyer has written a bunch of short stories in the Lunar Chronicles world, including Glitches, The Queen's Army, Carswell's Guide to Being Lucky, The Princess and the Guard, and The Little Android. All of these, some of these are out, some of these are not out, some of these are new. So she's just compiling them all in one beautiful book, and we will get it.
And there's going to be, yep. And there will be at least two other short stories in there that she's not naming, and an excerpt from Heartless.
So you'll still get a little bit of Heartless.
Which I'm excited about.
Yeah.
I know. I am excited in general about the whole situation. If you haven't read The Little Android is out. You can get it on ebook. I think it's either free or $1.99. It's so freaking cute.
Did you think The Little Android was about Aiko when you first read it?
I never thought it was about Aiko.
You didn't? See, I thought that was
I did not.
Story, but
I thought it would have been really cute, but I knew from the beginning that it was not Aiko. Because if it were Aiko, it couldn't possibly be the Little Android story.
Yeah.
Because, you know, it's the Little Mermaid.
But she wants to be a person.
Yeah, it's sweet. It's a cute story.
I'm really, really glad for these two things that we don't know about yet. Six stories together. That's coming out February 2nd next year, so we are excited for that. Anyway, and now on to the main event, which is the Mockingjay trailer. I've just noticed really big major trailers always air, you know, on an award show, at a convention, something big, you know, like the Super Bowl, whatever it is.
And yeah, but
yesterday when I Googled it, I'm thinking
it's a teaser. But Mockingjay and the Hunger Games, well, no. Okay, so the Mockingjay duo, the way that they have been advertising Mockingjay has been so vastly different from the way most other movies get advertised. I mean, they're trying to, like, go in with the whole
rebellion.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Know. Yeah, like you said, that is really on point. You think we should play the trailer?
Yeah.
Like at a Jurassic Park?
Yeah, that was fun.
Alrighty. For those of you who just want to revel in that, we will play it now.
Nothing good is safe while Snow's alive. And I can't another speech about it. Snow has to pay for what he's done.
One way or another, this war is going to come to an end. There's only one thing you could do now to add more fire to this rebellion.
We all have one enemy. He corrupts everyone and everything. He turns the best of us against each other.
Oh, my dear Miss Everdeen, make no mistake, the game doesn't ever.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the 76th Hunger Games.
Oh my gosh. I just have so many Katniss feels going on. I feel like the trailer is one big, what does she call them, promos?
Mm.
I feel like the trailer is a promo. President Snow must die. He must end. Tyranny, rebellion, fight with
right.
us, kind of thing.
Oh, man. I can't wait.
November, what, Alyssa?
20-something.
19th.
Shit.
That weekend of that day.
No, no.
Thanksgiving weekend.
Is that what it is?
It usually is. It's Thanksgiving weekend or the week of Thanksgiving or something like that. Because it's always around my aunt's birthday, which is the 21st.
Oh, okay. That makes sense.
So we're excited for that, too. And I think that's pretty much it as far as news goes. I didn't see much else. Allegiance filming. They've got more actors on set now. I don't think they've casted any new people that I know of. But if I'm wrong, we'll include that next time. Moving along to chapter by chapter. Our segment where we reiterate the book. Summarize all the good things. And today we are going to talk about chapters 23 through 30.
Yes.
And I went ahead and combined chapters 23 and 24 in a summary because they're so short.
They were.
And it's like to try to detail what happens is just a little bit,
it's a bit much.
Pointless. Yeah. So previously in chapter 22, all of our Dauntless friends got together and nominated three leaders. And that's basically where we left off at. Tobias was elected, Tori was elected, and some other guy was elected. I don't remember his name. But the reason why they elected them was because here in chapter 23, they're going to execute Eric. And he's being, you know, a douche. But but he needs to be ended. So Triss reads him his crimes, and Tobias shoots him. Be brave. And then, bam. And moving on after that, they leave Kander to go to Dauntless, back to their home. And they decide to cover up the cameras around there so that nobody can see what they're doing. Like the erudite, you know, techie people. So they use paintballs to cover up the cameras there, and bam, they're back home.
Yay!
Yay, home sweet home. They have like a paintball fight and it's a little bit better.
A little bit. After our delightful and lovely paintball fight, which was hilarious. In chapter 25, Tobias and Triss meet Evelyn on the train to discuss an alliance or a possible alliance with the Dauntless and the Factionless, which is just wonderful. Evelyn slips out that she was exiled from Abnegation, and Tobias is like, yeah, okay, that makes sense. I believe you. And Triss is like, yeah, but no, I don't want to do it. But in a rare show of diplomacy, decides not to object. So then there's they have an argument about whether Evelyn's a liar and Triss wanting to question Marcus. And after they argue, nothing gets resolved.
They can't do that yet.
I don't know why.
Because they're being stupid. Tobias is being stupid.
They're teenagers.
What happened to him being the smart one?
I don't know.
Remember, he was the smart one and Triss was being reckless. And now Tobias is like all biased because it's his mom. And Triss is like, you brought me to judge the situation. I'm telling you, it's not good.
Nope.
What was the point of that? I don't know. And do you really think Evelyn is lying about the abnegation kicking her out?
It's hard to say because, I don't know, she doesn't really give a good reason why they did.
I mean, not that that's relevant to the story, but...
No, I mean, but
Triss,
I mean...
Triss doesn't trust her. She thinks she's lying. And what? Didn't Evelyn cheat on Marcus?
No, but if she was kicked out of abnegation, there mm-hmm. should be a good reason for it because it's abnegation. They are right, selfless.
I think she says originally she had cheated on Marcus.
With who?
I don't know. They never say. That'd be interesting to know.
I would like to know that. So wait, hold on. Let me find out.
Yeah. So she cheated on him. So, I mean, I could see them, you know, what Marcus is, person of power. He's clearly not fully abnegation, so I mean, I could see him kicking her out. On the other hand, she could be lying because she just wants her son to trust her because she's manipulative, because she's an antagonist. So, who knows?
I don't know. No, she doesn't give a good reason for why she's exiled.
I know, so it's weird. It's like...
Yeah, I don't know, but here's what she said. They said, no, the abnegation were inclined towards forgiveness and reconciliation, as you might expect, but your father has a lot of influence over the abnegation, and he always has. I decided to leave rather than of public exile.
All right.
So she wasn't actually exiled. She was just almost exiled.
Got it.
Which is stupid.
And she decided to leave on her own, for that matter.
Yes. Strong-powered woman who loves her son but left him behind with a monster. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah, because that's real motherly.
I don't believe she has any motherly instincts.
That could be debated. What chapter are we on? Chapter 26?
Six.
All right. Who knows if she's lying or not? Meanwhile, when they get back, Christina wakes Triss up in the middle of the night and runs to the roof. And this is kind of where we see what the whole blue needle injection thing was about. Because there are these three people in a simulation on the roof, and they tell her that they have a message for the Divergent, and until one of the Divergent turn themselves in, they're going to keep killing people.
Yay.
And they jump off the roof. Because
Yay.
That was the point of the whole scene. So yeah, there's Triss, there's Christina, there's three people jumping off the roof, so they save the kids, basically. Christina grabs a little girl, Triss grabs Hector, who's Lynn's brother, and Marlene, unfortunately, drops.
Which is tragedy.
Sad.
It's super sad.
Because we like Marlene.
We do.
And Uriah. Anyway. So that happens.
Anyway.
More people dying. So what does Triss do? She decides, well, I'm going to be the one to turn myself in. This is kind of where the movie starts to deviate, I feel.
I'm pretty sure the movie deviated way before this. But
I feel like majorly this is where the movie starts to deviate.
But yes, you are very right.
One of the biggest things I have a problem with is why does Triss feel like she's the one who has to go? They said any Divergent, right?
Right. You know, this is when the savior complex kicks in, which I feel is a minor part of her PTSD.
Okay.
So she's like, okay, I've done all of these things and I need to be strong for the people that I love and I need to protect them and I should be the one that goes.
Got it. I feel like she's letting the guilt eat her way too much.
Which is why she's still in, like, mega PTSD mode. Which is never going to end, I don't think.
No, I don't think you get over killing people. I think that's kind of traumatizing till the end.
Well, I'm not going to say you get over it. But I will say that I know... Yeah, I know a lot of military guys who don't have PTSD.
Okay, so they haven't...
No, but let's be fair. I mean, Tobias was under a simulation. Christina was under a simulation. And while they're all in this, you know, we feel awful about what happened, they're not in the throes of PTSD.
Very true. Anyway, so all of that mess happens, and she's just, like you said, has that hero complex. She's going to turn herself in, she says.
Oh, yeah. And so witnessing these three people try to jump off the roof and then Marlene dying really helped Christina kind of get over her inability to forgive Triss.
Yep.
So she forgives her. They have one giant hug and they have their moment of, yes, we are friends again. And Triss is like, yay, thank God. And then Tobias is like, oh, and BT Dubs, no one's going to erudite ever.
Because he knows ever again. So well.
Yes. And that prompts more arguments. And then heavy makeout session, which is always healthy because nothing resolves an argument like sexual tension. Yep. Triss then promises him she will stay and essentially does the literary version of crossing her fingers behind her back as she says it. We're very disappointed with her.
She lies. They're all lies.
She does. She lies to us.
She's definitely not candor.
Definitely.
But no. But I think it's nice that she decides to have this one moment with Tobias. Like, all's good until I decide to sneak out. And then she does that. She catches Christina before she sneaks out and tells her about the information thing with Marcus. And remember that this information is something Erudite has that Marcus wants to investigate because it was information her parents died for. She feels that it's important that people know it. And because Christina's candor, Christina's going to get that. And understand why that's important to find.
And she does.
And then she sneaks herself off.
Yes.
To Erudite, where Peter, of all people, escorted her inside.
Well, because he's a little shit, so.
Yeah. Whenever she's with Christina, she does tell her that, no, I'm not going to do anything stupid. I'm just going to go see my brother, but I want to tell you in case something happens. And Christina's like, okay. And I feel like Christina knows she's lying. Do you think Christina knows she's lying?
I'm totally of the belief that Christina knows she's lying.
Me too.
Because at this point, Christina... eyes are wide open and she sees Triss for, I mean, she's basically spent like the last few days really, really watching Triss and is a little bit more in tune with what she's trying to do.
Not to mention that they were like best friends before this. So, I mean, it's not like she doesn't know her, but I feel like, what do you think that says about Christina and Triss now that Christina kind of lets her go off and do this thing? Like, she knows she's gonna do something stupid. She doesn't say what she's gonna do, but okay, I'm gonna let you go do your thing.
You know, I think it's now, it was National Best Friend Day a couple days ago.
Was it?
It was.
I'm a bad best friend.
There's a point when you're best friends where you know that your best friend is going to do something stupid and you're either going to go along with it to make sure it's not worse than it already is.
Mm-hmm.
Or you know that you can't stop it from happening.
Okay.
I'm not entirely convinced that they're like super best friends anymore, but I think that Christina is like in that space where she knows Triss is going to do something stupid and she knows that she simply cannot stop her.
So it's one of those inevitable things.
Yeah.
And she knows the reality of what's going to happen if no one turns himself in. So
exactly. And no one would turn themselves in because everyone in Dauntless is like, no, not Divergent.
I don't get them. I guess because Triss and Tobias are the only people from Abnegation, the only selfless people in there who really have the guts to do fake decisions, but whatever. But yeah, they do the thing.
Chapter 29, Triss goes in to Erudite. Peter brings her in. She's like, Janine's going to want to see me. And Janine's like, of course it's fucking you. But no one will tell her the time. Which is a weird thing for Triss to be obsessed with at that moment, I think. Didn't really make sense to me.
I just think it's a thing about her. Are you like that? Do you have to know the time all the time?
No. I don't.
I'm like that. I have to always know what time it is. Especially like at night when I'm sleeping, when I wake up in the middle of the night, I always check the clock. I will never just go right back to sleep.
I mean, I do that too, but I don't have to know what time it is.
But if I don't have a clock or a watch or a phone or anything to be able to tell me, I'm asking people.
It does. It bugs me. I guess it depends on the situation I'm in. If I'm like, if I'm in the Caribbean or if I'm on vacation, fuck time.
Okay. In response to where you're going with that, I'll go ahead and say that, for instance, when I'm working out and it's all pain and I can't stand it.
When is this over? When is this over? When is this over?
When is this over? How long have we been doing this again? How long have I been? It's only been 8 minutes. Are you kidding me? My legs are on fire. And that's probably what's going on in her mind. She's nervous and she's anxious and she feels like this is like confinement. So that's probably where that comes from.
Probably. After that, Janine comes in and gets her, explains that they're going to study Triss and then kill her because Triss is the strongest Divergent they have. And she explains this by saying, you're Divergent in 3 different factions.
Which, how would she know that?
Because we don't know that yet.
I know.
We don't know that yet.
Peculiar.
But it's very peculiar. And she, you know, she demands to see the results. She's very disciplined in her goal, has very little value on self-rewards, which makes her selfless and a martyr, which means she's erudite, dauntless, and abnegation. All three. Right?
Yeah.
And then she gets taken back to her cell because they're not ready for her yet. And while she's getting trounced back to her cell, there's Tobias in erudite as a prisoner. Like, why does he do this? Like, seriously, dude. Yeah. Why would you do this?
I don't know.
And then he says the stupidest thing ever.
I love this line.
You die. I die. No, Tobias, that's not how that works. Actually, so that's not how that works.
Did you get any Titanic flashbacks when you were
reading that? Of course I did.
You jump,
I'll never let go.
That's all I
can think of. Like, of course you're going to fucking let go. This is my problem. It's of course you're going to fucking let go. Everyone lets go.
Oh my gosh. Okay, so we can't talk about that.
Everyone.
I'll go into a real big tizzy about why the heck he didn't just pull him on top of the effing door with her. But
we can't talk about that. We can't talk about that. We can't talk about it because it's going to bug all of us.
Let's move on.
It's going to bug us. Moving on.
Yeah.
So she then gets put in her cell and thus begins chapter 30 when she's crying her eyes out. Deal with it. It's like,
I want to ask one quick question before you get on to chapter 30 real quick.
Okay.
So before Triss decided to be a martyr and run off, she told Tobias that, you know, if she died, he would move on. He's like, no, I won't. Why are you talking like this? And then now that she sees that Tobias has just done this big tragic thing by essentially killing himself, Peter tells her, he's stupid. Why didn't he just move on and get a different girlfriend? And she tells him, if you think that's what it's about, then you're the stupid one. So my question is, what changed in her mind?
So I'm sure what changed is the fact that she got proof that he would, you know, do that for her.
I don't think she really understood that he loved her.
No, I don't think so. Like, and I think that him showing up in erudite, it's. See, here's my problem. Is that we go back to when we were reading Divergent. I don't like this love story.
Okay.
And it's not that I don't think that the two of them are well paired or anything like that. I just don't like the way it's done, basically. I don't like the way it's written. It's so, in some cases it seems forced, and in other cases it just seems like it's what's supposed to happen because the author just like goes along with it because it seems like the right pair that should be together regardless of whether or not that they actually should be together.
Okay.
That's kind of what Tobias and Triss feel like to me. I feel like she was trying to force a love story into this story, into the series. And this was the way she had to do it. I wonder sometimes if she felt like she had to do it because it's a teen book.
Like maybe she didn't originally want to tell a love story, but kind of had to.
Yeah. It just feels very forced to me sometimes, which is probably why I get these irrational anger moments over things like Tobias saying, you die, I die. I mean, but the other problem is that it sounds so juvenile in my head, which at the same time is exactly what it should sound like because she's what, 16?
Yeah.
And he's 19?
A couple years older than her, yeah.
He's 19, something she's like 16. They are teenagers. It should sound juvenile, but I hate it.
I understand what you're saying because it's just so dramatic. It's so ridiculously dramatic. It's like I'm watching a teen soap opera. I feel like that's just their world, that there's a lot going on and the stakes are really high. And so they have to be dramatic because it's a product of what they are going through. I have no idea. The one thing that I really love about this story is that I hate it. I can't stand it when people fall in love in like half a book. Like they meet each other and they're so enthralled with each other. And by the end of the book, it's all great because they've gone through one trial. So then it's all good. They're together forever. And that's the thing I love about this series is that doesn't happen. It literally takes 3 books for them to go through what they go through. And I just...
Yeah, but that said, I kind of... No, we don't need to go into like how romance works in books.
Alrighty.
We don't need to do that. Because we're just going to get sucked into a hole. And then it really will be 2 hours.
Okay. So
and we're doing so well.
We're doing very well. I'm pretty impressed with us.
So chapter 30.
Chapter 30.
Triss is crying in her cell.
Okay.
And she's crying and crying and crying and crying and crying and continually crying until she's taken to another room that resembles vaguely a medical office of some kind. She still doesn't have the time, so she's still asking for time. Mm-hmm. And she's put into the chair and injected with a serum that causes her to go into a simulation where she's riding the bus with her mother. And her mother tells her that erudite will help them and to take care to remember. And immediately Triss knows that this is not right and blows up the bus with her mind.
With her mind powers.
With her divergent mind powers. And says, you'll have to do better than that to Janine when she like gets out of the simulation. And then Janine ends the chapter with the very, very sinister sounding, that was only the beginning.
Great way to end the chapter.
It's a great way to end the chapter. Hell, it's a great way to end a book.
So that leaves us at a good point for next time. I was surprised. I'm glad we didn't go into chapter 31.
Yes.
So we'll have
chapter 31 would have been a lot.
And I feel like next time we'll go, 31 through 36?
So chapters for next time, I was thinking from 31 to 38. So we stop at 38. It's not a lot.
So we'll pick up next time for 31 through 38 if you want to follow along with us. If not, that's just what we're going to do.
Yeah.
And we're going to transition on to our game today, which is not really a game. It's a manifesto. No. In this segment of chapter by chapter, we left Candor. So I thought we'd kind of talk about the Candor manifesto. And it's long. It's really long. I didn't want to read the whole thing. The whole thing is kind of broken up into three different sections. And that's what these title quotes are. And then I just picked out like some of my favorite parts from that portion of the manifesto. But it's interesting. So the first title says, dishonesty is rampant. Dishonesty is temporary. Dishonesty is evil. And one of the parts in there says, what has become clear is that lying is just a temporary solution to a permanent problem. Lying to spare a person's feelings when the truth would help them improve damages them in the long run. Lying to yourself only lasts so long before the truth emerges. Like an animal, the truth is too powerful to remain caged. I don't know. I have issues with the whole Candor manifesto because to say that lying is evil, that dishonesty is evil, is like very one-sided. But at the same time, I like all the points it makes.
Yes.
Alrighty. And then the next portion says, dishonesty leads to suspicion. Suspicion leads to conflict. Honesty leads to peace. And for this paragraph, one of the things it says is, when we are asked our opinions, we are free to give them. When we engage in conversation with others, we do not have to evaluate their intentions. Most of all, we are free to expose our dark secrets because we know the dark secrets of those around us. While we are all flawed in a unique way, we are not unique because we are all flawed. This makes us authentic. That one might be my favorite.
I like it. I mean, it's terrifying.
It is. But I like the idea of not having to worry about what other people are thinking. As someone who's self-conscious, I always do that. In the back of your mind, you're thinking, oh my God, why did they just say that? Thinking, what are they really thinking?
Right.
So
I totally get that. It makes sense to me. But at the same time, it's absolutely terrifying. Like, this is why I can't be in Candor.
To be able to say everything flat out?
I don't want to say everything. I don't want to know everything. I don't want to say everything. My shit is private. No one else needs to know it. I don't need to air it. I don't want to know your shit. You don't need to be brutally honest with me. Unless I ask for you to be brutally honest with me, please do not tell me exactly everything that is on your mind because I don't want to know.
That's so funny.
I don't care that much.
That's really a good mind your biscuits and gravy kind of mindset. I like that.
It is. It is a mind your P's and Q's. Keep yourself to yourself. I don't need to know your shit. Too much truth is not healthy.
True. Yes. It's very true. However, I cannot stand it when people lie to me or even try to deceive me in any way. Like the thought that someone looked me in the face and tried to tell me something that wasn't true burns me. So it's like a mixed emotion. I don't know how to explain it. But I get what you're saying. I can't stand it. I can't stand the thought of just walking around telling everything, my whole life story to everybody either.
No. I don't need everyone telling me like, oh, Alyssa, your hair looks like shit today. $10 says I already knew that. Either I already knew my hair looked like shit, or I spent a long time on my hair trying to like style it in a specific way.
And I think it looks fantastic. Yeah, when you do it, when you spend so much time and you think it looks one way and then someone else tells you no.
Yes.
Who the hell cares?
That's hurtful. That's hurtful and I just don't need it. I would rather have a pleasant lie than truth all the time.
Oh man.
Which brings us to our next axiom.
Yeah. It says, truth makes us transparent. Truth makes us strong. Truth makes us inextricable. Now, Alyssa, because you're our journalism major, what does inextricable mean?
The official definition from dictionary.com is one, from which one cannot extricate oneself. Two, incapable of being disentangled, undone, loosed, or solved. Three, okay. Hopelessly intricate, involved, or perplexing.
Alrighty.
Latin.
So I think the best way to explain that is to just say the thing. So the beginning of this section, one of the things it says, if children are raised to hear both honest praise and honest criticism, they will not be so fragile as to crumble beneath the scrutiny of their peers. A life of truth makes us strong. I actually really like this part. I don't know why. I work with kids. I don't think kids should be insulted. But I feel like if anyone's going to tell a kid the truth about something, it should be their parents. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's a complicated thing.
I think
thing
there are certain...
parents can overstep that bounds too, so I don't know.
I think there are certain truths that are with their child. So that children hear from, you know, the very basic, you know, sweetie, you're really good at that. If they're really good at that, they need to be told that.
Yes, definitely.
For them to hear that. If they're doing something that they shouldn't be doing, they also need to hear that.
That's the key, I think, in here, is that it lists both honest praise and honest criticism. And some people just don't want to do one without the other. So I definitely see a point on that. Like, you have to have a balance.
So, yeah.
The next part, though, I think is what explains this whole inextricable comment. It says, adulthood would be defined as a time at which each member of society is capable of bearing one another's dark secrets through the full unveiling, which I guess means like the truth serum thing. You know, at the end of initiation, they do the thing where they, you know, reveal all their secrets. And just as every member did before them. It says they too will see the inner parts of their fellow members. In this way, we become inextricable. So after reading the definition of inextricable, I think what this means is that by laying everything out on the table and pouring yourself out to so many different people, it unifies them. I almost want to say it feels like this is a candor thing. It unifies them as a faction.
Yeah.
Which... it's almost like a big sorority thing. Like literally initiation, you know, it's like candor for life kind of thing. And I guess I could see that, because if I'm going to trust anybody in this world, I'm going to trust people who know everything about me because they know all my shit. I can't do that, but I like the idea of what it's trying to say, that bonds them.
Yeah, I guess it makes sense.
I just can't do
I
it.
Just have such an issue with like everybody knowing my mind. I accept that this is the way that they want to be, and that it is the thing that they do, but y'all don't want to know my dark secrets. I don't want to tell y'all my dark secrets.
I like to point out that I never once read anything about the candor being gossip mongers.
That's true.
It's a really complicated faction. I just don't understand all of it. Anyway.
I don't get it.
That's the gist. If you want to read the full manifesto, you can go to Divergent Wiki online, and they've got that whole thing. It's a very cool place, actually. There's a lot of really interesting things and what the book says and what, you know, resources say and things like that. So very cool stuff if you want to go check that out.
Mm-hmm.
We are going to end the show today with a final segment of book recommendations. Maybe there's not a book that you like to read during the summer, but maybe a book you like that takes place in the summer, or just a fun contemporary novel that you feel like works well in this category.
Okay.
I have to recommend two. I can't pick one or the other because they're both fantastic. One of them is We Are Liars by E. Lockhart, which is a really, really good book. And basically it's about this girl whose family is a very like manipulative and ruthless, and they're not pleasant people, and they're all like after this family fortune kind of thing. But the kids in the family are not like that. They're very much friends. And so it takes place during the summer when they go to like her grandfather's cabin or something. And meanwhile, the girl herself has like these blackouts, and there's this like unspoken thing that nobody will talk about. So it's almost like a big mystery book. That's all I can say. But it takes place in the summer. It's very intense. And if you want a really intense read, I would check it out because it's fantastic. And then I also have to recommend a contemporary book I read a couple of weeks ago called Simon Versus the Homo Sapiens Agenda by Becky Arbatali. Uh-huh. I talked about this book. And the last time I talked about it, I said it wasn't really what I thought it was going to be.
Uh-huh.
But that I liked it. Now, after finally reading the book, I cannot give it enough praise. It is a wonderful, fantastic little book. And
good.
I have to recommend that anybody who is anybody needs to read it, because it's a wonderful portrayal. One of the things on the back of the book says that it sounds like Becky Arbatali just took a diary of a gay boy in high school and wrote a novel about it. And that's essentially what it looks like.
Good.
It's like one of the best books I've read all year long. It really is. Those are my two recommendations. Thank you for your patience.
You're very welcome. My recommendation is a book called The Storied Life of A.J. Vickery, by Gabrielle Zevin. And I will admit that I read this because my mother forced me to, and I'm so glad that she did. It's such a good book. I mean, it's a really simple – the reason I'm calling it a beach read is because it's a simple, easy, fun read. There's drama, there's love. It's about a guy who owns a bookstore on an island similar to like Block Island and Martha's Vineyard. And it's just about him and his experiences and his like the stories of his life. And I loved everything about it. It was fun. It was quirky, book nerd things. Mm-hmm. But I just couldn't handle it. And I just loved everything about it. So that's my book recommendation. The Storied Life of A.J. Vickery by Gabrielle Zevin.
Wonderful.
Thank you, Mom.
So I think that's it.
I think so.
Under 2 hours. You did pretty good. If you have a beach read that you want to recommend to us, or any book for that matter, you can email in at factionfandompodcast@gmail.com. Send your loves or your criticisms. We don't care. We care.
I mean, loves are preferred.
Preferred. Hey, as long as it's honest criticism. See what I did there?
Yeah, I saw what you did there.
Never mind. But if you don't want to write in and you just want to follow us and see what we're up to, our Twitter is FFandomPodcast. Follow us on Tumblr at faction-fandom.tumblr.com. Sometimes we ask questions. Sometimes we just like to talk about random stuff. Sometimes it's just divergent gifs. You never know.
It's true.
The other day, I was in the Lunar Chronicles phase, and I was just on Tumblr talking about, like, what are we going to podcast about after Divergent? Like, would people even listen to a Lunar Chronicles podcast? I was just brainstorming. And somebody wrote in and was like, hey, this is a fantastic idea. You should do this. And
I think we could totally do this, and I think it would be a lot of fun if we did this.
I believe it was Amanda who has written in before. She says, Dear Faction Fandom, I love your podcast. It's funny. That same day you posted about the Lunar Chronicles, I was actually wondering what you guys would do when you finished reading and talking about Allegiant. I think the Lunar Chronicles is a great idea, but no matter what book you choose to do, I can't wait to hear an update. Sincerely, Amanda. And she's awesome. I feel like she's like the Faction Fandom best friend because she's always up for things. Oh man, we should get her on the show. We should make that happen or something.
That would be fun.
That would be very cool. But yeah, there's always possibilities. You never know. Allegiant's far off, so we'll see where we are by then. Alyssa may possibly hate me by then.
You never know.
Anything's possible. So yeah, those are the things we do on social media. As always, you can just check out the website, factionfandom.com. We've got a lot of subscribers over there. It emails you when the updates are, when the podcast posts. Lots of good things to look at. Definitely check out that spot too. And that is everything. Thank you so much for listening, guys. My name is Stephanie.
My name is Alyssa.
And we'll talk to y'all next time on episode 25.
Bye.
Fun fact, I am now the same age as the podcast in like.
Hey!
Yeah.
When was your birthday?
It was February.
Oh, no, I knew that. That's exciting.
Yeah. So it's like, it all comes full circle.